Chapter 45. Redoubled Efforts. Friday afternoon, after both Harry's weapons practices, he finished his shower and went rooting through his trunk for clothing. Easily finding his trousers, he'd started digging for a sweater when something pounded at the door. "Knock, knock," Hermione called through. "Open up, guys, I'm about to drop my notes." "Hold on a second," Harry yelled back. "Notes. Great," he grumbled mentally, buttoning his trousers with one hand and rummaging for the elusive sweater with the other. "Sweater, sweater, come on, where?" Ah! His fingers met knitted, scratchy wool, and he tugged. "Eh? That's my scarf. Where's a sweater?" "Guys!" More thumping against the door. It sounded like Hermione was kicking it. Harry gave up on the sweater and grabbed a t-shirt, yanking it over his head as he gestured that it was okay for Ron to get the door. Harry's head popped through the neck hole of the shirt as Hermione stumbled in, a stack of papers a good 3.5 feet high balanced precariously in her arms and falling. She swerved to the nearest bed, Kuwabara's, just in time for the stack to fall on the covers. "Finally," she huffed, as Kuwabara's cat pounced on a few sheets slipping off the far edge of the bed. "Took you long enough. Thank you, Eikichi," Hermione added, taking the papers from the cat, who batted at them twice before letting go, pretending she hadn't pounced them to be helpful. "Here, I brought everything I could find on year ritual magic, the old holidays, places of power in Britain, just in case, and so forth. You have no idea how long it took to write all this out." She smiled a bit tiredly. "It was good practice." "I'll just bet," Ron muttered, shifting the papers a bit. "Year ritual magic?" "Yes!" Hermione pulled the original calendar circle from Wednesday night out of her pocket, unfolding the parchment and smoothing it out. "We didn't mark the first of your visions, but it was early in August, right? Or that's when you guys mentioned it to me." She pointed at the circle, almost completely divided into eighths, though there was a gap with the lower right and bottom spokes missing. "So you've been having one every 6 weeks, on the old holidays, and it's simply ridiculous that it took us so long to realize it."
"Ridiculous," Harry murmured sarcastically. "Right."
The sarcasm was lost on Hermione, as she cheerfully continued. "So I've been trying to find stuff on the old holidays and the year spells. It's pretty much the same thing. You guys should have taken ancient runes with me. Most of what I've got is in strange shamanistic religious terms, so it's not that easy to translate."
"That's exactly why we're not in ancient runes, Hermione," Ron pointed out.
Hermione shot him a look.
"You don't know what you're missing."
"Do too."
"Anyway, I think it's saying that there's a sort of buildup of power in the world over the course of the year, as things grow and warm and the earth revolves around the sun, and it sort of snaps and blows off every few weeks. Like relieving pressure, see? I can't figure out yet how it works with the reversal in seasons between the northern and southern hemispheres, and in different climates, because I think it's rather strongly related to life cycles, and those are related to latitude."
Harry resisted the urge to rub his head as if he was developing a headache.
"Hermione, you're babbling." "Well, it's fascinating. This is advanced magical theory here."
"Could you dumb it down for us non-advanced magical non-theorists?" Harry clarified. Hermione sighed.
"We've got a bit less than 6 weeks before you know who makes his next step, and these papers describe a lot of things he might be doing."
"Thank you." "6 weeks. That's around May 1st, right?" Ron asked, glancing at Harry.
"Yes," Hermione answered, starting to reorganize her papers and not noticing Ron grin triumphantly at Harry.
Harry grinned back. "You guessed right, Ron," he thought.
6 weeks.
Wow, they actually had the drop on the bastard for a change.
"You know who's slipping. How are we supposed to miraculously thwart evil plots by the seat of our pants if we have time to plan?"
Ron grabbed for the papers cheerfully. "Who knows? We'll have to wing it."
"Lucky for us," Harry thought. "That's what Gryffindors do best."
On Saturday, Kurama brought a marked beaker and vial down to the lakeshore, setting himself up in one of the many rubble-strewn niches towards the east end of the lake. He scooped up about half a beaker's worth of the cloudy lake water, eyeing it carefully for anything odd. No animals, no plants, no mud. Good. Then set the beaker on a flat rock and waited for the water to settle. As it did so, he examined the vial, estimating the volume. It would hold a decent amount, perhaps 3 mouthfuls. He should only need 2, one for testing and one for use, which left 1 extra in case something went wrong. He set the vial next to the beaker and turned to the niche. 3 mouthfuls. That's how large a stone? Guessing it should be perhaps the size of a fist, Kurama gathered a number of stones, ranging from about half that size to somewhat larger. In the beaker, the water, settled and still, came up to about halfway between 2 marks. Kurama looped a bit of vine around the vial and lowered it into the beaker, watching the water rush in. When he pulled the vial out, capping it, shaking a couple of drops back into the beaker, he grew a new leaf to curl under it in case another drop formed, and pulled it away. The water level had dropped 2 marks and a hair's breadth from the original point, something Snape, with those damn eagle eyes of his, would notice instantly. Kurama took the smallest stone, looping another vine around it, and lowered it gently to the bottom of the beaker. It only raised the water 1.5 marks. He removed it and tried a larger one, this time bringing the water level up 2.5 marks. Again, he tried, and again, quickly zeroing in on the proper size stone to put the water level exactly where it had been before Kurama had removed a vial full of liquid. A dome-shaped rock, some common gray-brown lump that should have no magical properties. Taking the stone back, Kurama quickly dried it and slipped it into his pocket. He dumped the water back into the lake, set the vial into his shirt pocket, and returned to the school. As soon as he washed the vial and stone and got back to his room, he'd steal the doppelganger potion from Snape, using the rock to prevent the missing amount from being noticed. Doppelganger potion was thick and opaque like ink. The man wouldn't find the rock at the bottom of his jar of potion for months, if not years. "I am so good," Kurama thought smugly. Somehow, Draco just knew this was all Potter's fault. He sat across from the Dark Lord, sipping tea made without enough sugar or milk. Voldemort never asked or cared how Draco took his tea. It was late Saturday night, the 30th of March, and Draco was exhausted from the usual day-long trip from Hogwarts to the Malfoy estate. But no, he who kept losing to a spoiled brat wanted a field report immediately. "At least he's graciously allowing me to drink my tea before I speak," Draco thought sarcastically. "Bastard." He set the cup in the saucer, carefully keeping his eyes properly downcast, like a good subordinate. "Ugh. Hex me now. No, hex Potter now. His fault. Bloody muggle lover won't die." "Tell me of your progress," Voldemort commanded, putting his own tea aside and steepling his hands. Now that he had leave, Draco looked up. "It is slow, my lord, but I am making headway despite the Hufflepuff girl's obtuse nature." That was good. Emphasize the girl's Hufflepuffness. "And I am pleased to report..." "Careful, Draco, careful. Skirting the dangerous territory of having an opinion that risks being counter to his own here. That, while attempting to draw her out, I discovered that the girl has injured or killed a person before with her powers." Draco raised an eyebrow. "Indeed. She was most emotional on the subject, my lord, and hastened me from her presence. But she has little skill at hiding her guilt. She has most certainly frozen people with her powers. I have not yet been able to ascertain if her attacks were lethal or not." Voldemort sat back thoughtfully. "And you say she is one of the weakest of these foreigners?" "All reports indicate that, my lord." and the least violent. Draco bowed his head, hating himself and Voldemort and especially Potter, who couldn't just die 15 years ago like he should have. "Yes, my lord." Voldemort mulled that over for a long moment. "They may not be permitted to join Dumbledore's side," he said decisively. "Redouble your efforts." "Yes, my lord." "Damn it, Potter. I would have been a prince had you just gone and died, and now I'm stuck wheedling arrogant, disrespectful foreigners into my proper station. Should they show any sign of allegiance to him, alert your father at once." "Yes, my lord." Voldemort eyed him. "Do not worry, young serpent. It won't be your task to neutralize them if it comes to that." He flicked his wand, and a roll of parchment appeared on the table, unfurling to reveal a map, and Voldemort gestured for Draco to lean closer. "Attend," he said, as firmly as a Victorian tutor. He tapped the map and began tracing a route with his wand. "This will be your task." It took all of Draco's willpower not to faint on the spot in recognition. "I'm going to get killed doing that. Damn you, Potter, why didn't you bloody well die?" Monday had turned out to be a gorgeous, sunny day, though slightly breezy and on the cool side. To escape the Weasley twins and their birthday hijinks, Harry and Ron had challenged Yusuke and Botan to broom races on the Quidditch pitch. With Ron borrowing Botan's firebolt, Botan herself was able to use her oar, non-regulation and therefore banned from Quidditch games, thus the firebolt. So far, she'd won all three of her races, and done a few tricky twirls around the goalposts to show off. Ron and Yusuke lined up for their one-on-one race, toes brushing the same goal hoop. "Ready?" Botan yelled, a hand raised. "Set, go!" The two of them shot forward. Harry knew the route. Straight to the opposite center goal, three times around each post, then clockwise around the stadium five times, first to thread the starting hoop one. And he wasn't the referee this round. He idly looked away, gazing over the grounds. A flicker of movement just this side of the rise between Hagrid's and the pitch, a spot of red, green, and black hurrying towards the forest. Kurama? Harry lifted a hand to shade his eyes from the sun, peering more closely. Yes, it was Kurama. There were very few students in the school with hair that color and length, and only a Slytherin would wear the Slytherin scarf. What on earth was he doing? Harry? Botan asked. What is it? Harry gestured with his chin. Minamino, he's going into the forest. Botan looked. Well, I won't tell if you won't. We should see what he's up to. It's either something interesting or something very, very evil that I should know about. Yeah. I don't think Kurama would be doing something evil or against me, but maybe I should make sure. Oh, he's probably just training, Botan said cheerfully. We'll mess him up if we go barging in. Training? In the Forbidden Forest? With all the hungry, monstrous beasts in there? Right. Sure, no better place for a plant master to train. Miles of weapons. Plant master? Botan tapped his shoulder. Leave it, Harry. Come on, they're on the fourth lap. You and Ron get to go against me next round. Harry glanced one last time at the forest, bit his lip, and decisively turned away. Deep in the forest, Kurama stopped in the center of a large clearing, surrounded and guarded by plants, both his own and those already established in the forest. He reached into his shirt pocket and removed the precious vial of doppelganger potion. It looks like nothing more than plain ink, he thought, holding it up to the light. What little there was in the thick, permanent gloom. He uncapped it and took a cautious whiff, wrinkling his nose at the stench. Definitely doesn't smell like ink. More like Muggle toilet cleaner, with hints of rotting ginkgo fruit and fish brine. At that level of nauseousness, the proper dose couldn't possibly be more than a single swallow. No one, no matter how masochistic or desperate, would be willing to drink two in a row. I am really going to regret this, but... Kanpai! Kurama pinched his nose, lifted the vial to his lips, and drank. The world swirled black, and he quickly flicked the cap back over the vial as something deep in his body wrenched free with a shocking, painless pop. Kurama blinked his eyes open to find his own face staring blankly back at him. The other abruptly sagged and crumpled, and Kurama leapt forward to catch the alternate. They sank to the ground under the alternate's dead weight, Kurama gently twisting him as they fell so that the other lay half in the leaf litter and half in Kurama's arms. Abruptly, Kurama realized the alternate still clutched the vial. He glanced up wildly. The trees in front of him didn't match the ones that had been in front of him before he'd taken the potion. A quick peek over his shoulder revealed those trees were now behind him. So this body... I'm the alternate? And this... He looked down at the body in his arms. A living, breathing, warm doll. This one's the real body? My real body? Kurama shuddered. He looked like... There were creatures in Makai, the victims of operations gone horribly wrong, failed experiments, mind rapes. One couldn't call them beings anymore, really. No minds or souls left. That's it, Kurama realized. My soul. I'm in a created body. My real one looks empty, because it is empty. So, how do I get back? I've transferred my soul before, when I got shot by that hunter and found Chiori's fetus. How do I do that again? He'd been desperate, and in a lot of pain, working mostly by instinct. Instinct, he muttered softly. Right. How did it become instinctive to push his soul out of his body? The same way he pushed his magic out into his plants? But it's not the same. I have a medium to work with, something physical to send the power through. He had something physical here, too, though. A body that belonged to him, anyway. Maybe if he pushed the way he did with his magic... Kurama reached deep inside himself, tugged, and tried to push the power through his hand, the way he did with his plants. The ground shivered, and tiny green leaves burst through the leaf litter, radiating outwards. Kurama quickly stopped the power. That didn't work. Maybe if I try to recreate that snap that happened when I took the potion? He closed his eyes and focused, reaching deep once again. He twisted, he pulled, he rattled and yanked and tried to throw himself free of the body. But it was as futile as trying to fly by throwing himself at the ground and missing. Kurama sagged down over himself. Surely there had to be a way. Unless it was a simple matter of a time limit for the potion to wear off. That can't be it. Even a wizard can't be stupid enough to invent a potion that would split their soul from their body and rely only on a time limit to get back. What if he got injured in the false body? I am not trying that. Something large skittered along his spider vines, high overhead, and Kurama glanced up. Something wants to try it for me, I see. He sat his other self up, ducking under the other body's arm, and stood, pulling the limp form up with him. Ugh, I'm heavy. Granted, the problem is mostly that he's, whatever the pronoun is, the unconscious me is relaxed rather than tense, and thus is floppy, limp, dead weight. But I think I could stand to skip that dinnertime pudding every so often. In the canopy, Kurama's spider vines lashed around the beast, cocooning it against a tree branch. Kurama chuckled, pulling the other's arm just a bit further and angling his torso so his other body's feet didn't drag over the ground. Eight legs. Spider vine caught a spider. How appropriate. It thrashed furiously and keened as Kurama left the clearing, the cry piercing through the forest gloom. On the Quidditch pitch, Harry jerked at the sound of a faint, familiar, inhuman cry, and nearly rammed into Yusuke before they stopped their brooms. He whirled, eyeing the forest. Ron flew up near Harry, pale and shaking.
Acromantula,
Harry murmured under his breath.
Minamino.
What? Ron asked.
Minamino's in the forest,
Harry explained in a yelp, kicking his firebolt into gear.
He's what?
Botan darted in front of Harry, blocking his way. He twisted, and hands grabbed the back of his shirt and broom. Harry glanced back as Yusuke yanked him closer and pinned his arms.
What are you doing?
He yelled, trying and failing to pull loose. Yusuke was stronger than he looked.
What are you doing?
Yusuke shot back. Out of the corner of his eye, Harry saw a flash of familiar red below him, Ron flying into position to catch Harry if he fell.
I think he's trying to fly to Kurama's rescue, Botan said, smiling wryly. Heroic tendencies.
Yusuke blinked.
Kurama?
In the forest, Botan said brightly, pointing.
We saw him while you were racing Ron earlier.
Harry kicked, and Yusuke tightened his grip.
That's so. Yes, damn it,
Harry yelled.
Let me go. We have to help him. That was an acromantula.
And Aragog's nest was near the area where Kurama had entered the forest.
What's that? Yusuke asked. Giant spider, Botan answered. Can get as large as a car.
Yusuke blinked, brow furrowed in puzzlement.
And that's a threat to Kurama how?
Botan beamed.
It's not.
Freezing in Yusuke's grip, Harry stared, aghast.
What?
Well, unless he got knocked out by something worse earlier, it's not, Botan admitted.
Something worse? Ron squeaked. Like what?
Yusuke grinned wickedly.
If I had to guess, the most dangerous thing in the area right now is the five-tailed fox.
Botan mimicked a swat at Yusuke, glaring.
That's not funny.
It wasn't supposed to be, Yusuke said unrepentantly. I can't think of anything else around here that could touch Kurama if he didn't feel like it. Not while he's in the woods. And I'm right. There's Kurama now. He let Harry go, pointing to a spot of red hovering at the edge of the trees. Harry blinked, tilting a bit to peer around Botan. It was Kurama, waving cheerfully at them. No, beckoning. Botan looped around on her oar. I'll go see what he wants. And she arrowed away, nudging his broom further over the stands and away from Yusuke. Harry did not want to get grabbed again. Harry squinted, trying to see as Botan hovered before Kurama attentively. It was a bit hard to tell at this distance, but the Slytherin didn't look injured. Ron came up between Harry and Yusuke.
Odd that.
What? Harry asked. He's just standing there, Ron said. Most anyone would be halfway to the dorms by now, being in the forest when that... He gulped. Spider screeched. Even a Gryffindor. Now that Ron mentioned it, that really was weird. Slytherins weren't noted for bravery.
Told ya, Yusuke said, as Botan turned to fly back. He ain't got a reason to be scared. Miles of weapons right there.
What's he want, Botan? The girl shrugged as she flew into earshot.
To talk to you.
Huh. Yusuke pondered that for a second, then shot away, leaving Harry dumbfounded. He couldn't just come over here? Ron wondered aloud. Harry edged a bit lower, wondering if he could get past Botan.
Apparently not, he murmured, calculating.
If he darted like so, and looped like so, and pushed his firebolt faster than it really should go, and didn't fall off when he zigged in that direction, he could make a real spectacle of himself and not manage to sneak up on Yusuke and Kurama to hear whatever interesting plots they were hatching in the forest.
Damn.
He dropped the idea. Yusuke landed, jumping from his broom with a certain wild, unpolished flair. He swung the broom over his shoulder and grinned. Yo, what's up?
I'm sorry to drag you away from your... game?
Kurama said politely, not entirely certain what the little flock of broom riders had been doing. Races, Yusuke filled in casually. No problem. They pretty much ended when that whatever screeched in the forest. Harry was going ballistic about you being in here.
Kurama blinked. Gryffindor heroic tendencies aren't exaggerated, I take it.
I've only seen Kuwabara worse, Yusuke replied. So, what'd you call me down here for?
Well, Kurama smiled ruefully, stepping back into the forest's gloom. Yusuke followed. I was testing something, and I thought I'd ask your advice. You've had an out-of-body experience, right?
If you can call being dead an out-of-body experience, yeah, Yusuke admitted, scratching his head as Kurama led him past the first line of trees. Why?
Kurama led him around a larger tree, stepping carefully over thick devil's snare vines, and Yusuke cut himself off.
Bloody sodding hell!
Kurama stopped, standing over the body he'd left guarded by the snare at the base of the tree, and grinned sheepishly. I was testing a potion I stole, and... well, he gestured at the false body he was wearing. I'm sort of stuck in the wrong one.
Damn, Yusuke muttered, incredulous, his eyes flicking back and forth between the two identical Kuramas suspiciously. You can't just have small problems, can you?
Not dramatic enough, Kurama said easily.
So what am I supposed to... No! Yusuke backed up a couple of steps, shaking his head. No, 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 no!
No what? Kurama asked.
I ain't kissing a guy, Yusuke blurted. Keiko would have my head!
Kurama blinked.
What? You heard me!
Yes, but you're making no sense, Kurama said. I wanted to ask how you got back into your body. What does kissing have to do with...
Suddenly it clicked.
Oh, that's how?
Yeah, Yusuke grumbled. Something about breathing life energy. And I like you and all, man, but can't you find one of the girls to do it?
Thoughtfully, the gears in his mind turning, Kurama murmured, That may be... No, of course not. You were non-corporeal, weren't you? Not inhabiting a physical body?
Yeah.
So you needed the life energy by proxy. But I'm physical, Kurama mused. I may not need... Well,
he brushed his hair aside and knelt, tipping his real body's face up.
Only one way to find out.
And Kurama pressed his lips to his own. Gah! Yusuke yelped. Shit, warn a guy when you do that!
Kurama pulled away with a frown and turned to see Yusuke, red-faced and hastily looking away. It didn't work.
Yusuke went even more red. You gotta, I don't know, like CPR or something. I think. You really should have talked to Keiko. I wasn't even in the room!
You are so old-fashioned, Kurama commented. All those hentai manga, and you can't stand to see anything in real life.
I can too, Yusuke sputtered. It's just, it's you and yourself. And that stuff's supposed to be private and special, and can I go now?
Kurama ignored the question. I'm trying again.
Yusuke squawked, and from the corner of his eye, Kurama saw him spin to face some other direction entirely.
And then Kurama's lips pressed against his unconscious self's mouth again, and he nudged them open and breathed. The world swirled black once more. Kurama blinked at himself a second. His perspective had changed again. The false body slid to the ground, puffed into a swirl of mist, and vanished. Well, Kurama murmured, that was interesting.
The break ended, and the first night back saw Hermione's usual post-Easter ritual starting up again. This year, though, it seemed 5 times worse.
Ronald Weasley, we only have 10 weeks until owls!
She screeched, brandishing a color-coded chart over his evening chess game. Opponent, a 7th-year Ravenclaw boy, one of the Newt-level defense students.
It's 5 years of material! 5! And you didn't even so much as open a single book over the break?
Checkmate, Ron said, standing and offering his hand to the Ravenclaw. Good game.
Are you even listening to me? The owls determine your whole future, and you're playing games?
I, Ron hissed back, am doing my defense homework, believe it or not. Not that I really think studying myself into a mental breakdown is any way to prepare for the stupid owls.
Harry carefully, quietly packed up his books, edged to the stairs, and slipped up to his dorm before they really started in on each other.
Maybe I should just study up here the rest of the term. I have a feeling they're going to bicker like this all through it.
Friday rolled around, and near the end of dinner, McGonagall began tapping her spoon against her goblet. The hall slowly quieted, and Dumbledore stood.
All fifth years, he said, voice echoing through the hall, are to meet outside Professor Hagrid's at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. He paused, eyeing the crowd, and added, attendance is mandatory. The hall burst into noise as Dumbledore sat down once more.
No fair, Ron grumbled. That's our bloody time, damn it.
A murmur of agreement ran around the table.
They've never singled out a class before, Hermione murmured. I wonder why.
Betcha Hagrid's gotten something new and interesting, Seamus said. We're probably mucking out pens.
All of us? Hermione asked dryly, rolling her eyes. Don't be stupid.
Then what do you think it is, oh great genius Prefect Granger?
Well, Hermione mused, from the way Professors McGonagall and Snape are frowning, I would say it's something they both disagree with. That narrows the possibilities a lot.
Really? Harry asked. To what?
I don't know.
That, Harry thought, with a sort of resigned weariness, is always a bad sign.
I don't think I'm going to like tomorrow.